Welcome back to Head Games with Peter Roby from the Center for the Study of Sport and Society and Dr. Andrew Jacobs. And Andy, we've been talking about the phenomenon that was uncovered with the autopsy with Andre Roeder's suicide that showed that his brain had deteriorated to that of an 85-year-old. And there seems to be a direct link with those with concussions. And my point is, and our discussion is about, the sacrifice sometimes that we forget that athletes make, particularly football players.
Well, you're right, Nick, but at the same time, I think a lot of this is an eye-opening study for a lot of people, because I don't think anyone really had any conception that concussions could do this type of damage. I think it's going to really open up a lot of people's eyes to really just how violent and dangerous the sport of football can be.
Peter, what can people do now in terms of protecting their kids, making sure that they can enjoy the sport, not take away the joy, the spirit of it, but also be more intelligent in the way they go about it?
Well, I think they have to take the injuries more seriously and not subscribe to the traditional view of toughness and athleticism and what it means to be courageous and being the ultimate teammate. You know, we get caught up in all the romanticism around winning one for the Gipper and playing when you're injured and being a hero. But as we can see from many of the examples of players that have tried to play beyond when they were healthy, or boxers that have stayed involved in the game much longer than they should have, there's some real debilitating health issues that can impact athletes well after their playing careers are over. And I hope that parents and athletic directors and coaches at youth and high school levels and in college will take that concern seriously and hold their athletes out a little longer than maybe they might have in the past, because it's going to be in their best interest long term.
You know, Nick, this makes Tiki Barber's decision to retire,
yeah,
I think, that much more meaningful, because here's a young man who obviously is at his peak and he could keep playing. He's one of the best running backs in the game, but he's more concerned about his life after the game and his future, and he's just decided to hang it up because he's got other things he can do, and he wants to keep his health with him. And I'm sure all he has to do is look at Earl Campbell as an example of what can happen if he kept playing.
And to your point, people have questioned his commitment to the Giants and his whether it was appropriate for him to leave his team in the lurch. And that's not about leaving your team in the lurch. It's about doing what you think is best for you and your family in the long run.
And let's also say that we need to have the NFL and the Players Association, which, as Chris Mortensen said, have seemed to really turn a blind eye. One of the things they're saying now is that the age expectancy, the two different research papers have said it was 54 in 1970 and 54 in 1990, 91, which was in USA Today in the early 90s. They're now saying that it's not that bad. I hope that this will be one more opportunity for the NFL Players Association and the union and the NFL itself to really do more to show some respect for the kind of lives and quality of lives that players have to deal with after their careers are over. Peter, before we let you go, we talked with Chris Berman yesterday about the fact that this is an opportunity this weekend to set the stage for a very real possibility of a black head coach winning the Super Bowl for the first time. And like Doug Williams, when he won the Super Bowl with the Redskins, perhaps that provides a great opportunity for a new milestone in race relations, a new milestone in normalcy. Here's Chris Berman.
I had to be reminded, I never looked at Warren Moon as a black quarterback. I looked at him as a quarterback that played in Canada that I followed, and followed winning the Rose Bowl. And I say this because there we are at Canton, and I went to his celebration. Warren and I are pretty good friends, as I'm sure you are too. And then Doug Williams was there, and Marlon Briscoe came over and introduced himself. And there was a fellow that I had watched, actually, said, one of the games you started was at Shea Stadium against the Jets. He goes, how do you know? I said, because I was on the upper deck. And then there was James Harris, and then it said, oh, yeah, that's right, Warren, black quarterback, Hall of Fame. So I hope that many people, and I didn't catch the earlier part of the show, weren't really cognizant of the fact that, well, Lovie Smith, Tony Dungy, this could be. I look at them as especially Coach Dungy, who's been at it a long time, as an outstanding football coach. Now, that being said, what is the message? The message is that maybe to an 8-year-old black or Asian or green or maybe white, it doesn't matter, 8-year-old boy or a 10-year-old boy, I can do that. You know, so that's the good part of it, and that what we're pointing out is, boy, that's not the normal path to success, and now they could be a Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl, and it's a different skin. So maybe it's inspiring to somebody who we'll hear about 40 years from now, and that way, I think it's great.
Peter, before we let you go, what do you think this opportunity means in the history, especially during a week when we marked Martin Luther King and his contributions? What does it mean?
As much as I appreciated Chris's comments, I think Chris has it wrong. It's not about inspiring a young kid to dream about being a football coach, because there's been plenty of there's been decades of kids dreaming about being a football coach, because you've got 60-70% of them playing football. The hope is that it's going to make an impact on the ownership groups and people in positions of authority and access to make the hiring of a football coach a meritocracy and not about what the color of your skin is. Because if you've got people with the opportunity, they're gonna deliver. And I think that's the lesson for any owner out there in any professional sport, or an athletic director or a college president in 1A football, is that it's okay to put your trust and faith in a person of color to run your football team, because they're as capable as anybody else.
And I think that's just so obvious now. Well, Pete, thanks for joining us. And if anybody wants to learn more about the outstanding work of the Center for the Study of Sport and Society at Northeastern University, how do they do that?
They can go to www.sportinsociety.org and learn all about us.
All right, my friend.
Thank you, Nick. Always great being with you.
Thank you. Peter Roby. Well, we're going to go down under with somebody that Dr. Andrew Jacobs knows, Luke Jensen. Are you awake, buddy?
Oh, absolutely, man. The tennis has been hot. It's been fantastic.
Hey, the tennis has been hot. Those Aussie girls drinking beer, they're drinking you under the table. I know it.
Well, I'm just staying focused on the ball. It's a slam. We have time to party after the win.
Good man. Good man. Well, you know, we were talking about that this weekend represents an opportunity to set up a possible Super Bowl champion coach who is a black, and I thought that in tennis, which has had its issues with the advancement of blacks in tennis, of course, Arthur Ashe being the most famous in contributing to that advancement, what do you think this, from your own perspective, this would mean if a Lovie Smith or a Tony Gundy was able to win the Super Bowl?
That would be just fantastic, another step in the right direction. It's giving minorities an opportunity to get out and show what they can do. I mean, especially when you have so many African-Americans playing the game of football, they just need to start moving in, and the ownership and the NFL having the confidence with putting them in the right direction. And when you have a hiring process where they have to interview at least a minority in the process, I think it's a step in a great direction.
Well, let's get an update for you. The big, big win for Andy Roddick, and two, as you described them, heavyweights of the game against Murat Safin, both of them 6'4", 195, 200 pounds, Roddick's huge serve and Safin's ground strokes. Tell me, what was different about Roddick in terms of his tactics in this game?
Well, Jimmy Connors, the new coach of Andy Roddick, came down and flew in. And the biggest thing is that Andy Roddick has evolved as a player. Tiger Woods evolved as an athlete, had to change his stroke, and he's bigger and better than ever. Andy Roddick, the same thing. The game evolves. The players get better. So if you stay with the same type of game plan, they're going to beat you. They're going to figure you out. And that's what's happened to Andy Roddick. They figured out his big, powerful game plan with the big serve and the big forehand. But last night was the best match overall that I've ever seen Andy Roddick play, especially against one of the top guys. Safin can beat you from anywhere. He's won the Australian. He's won the U.S. Open. But it was Roddick's ability to chip in charge, to move forward, and force Murat Safin to hit passing shots. It was the combination of power and then tactics that won the match.
What's interesting to me is, having played some tennis myself, certainly not at that level, but you know, when you have a guy with the world's most powerful serve, that it's a new thing that he would come to the net. He came to the net 52 times. How much of that was because Safin has played 2 5-setters and he knew that he had that advantage in terms of a guy that may have been a little bit fatigued?
Yeah, Safin was a little bit on the ropes, but Safin has won here before, where he won 4 five setters out of the seven matches he had to win. The guy's in shape. I think the biggest thing is for Andy Roddick to understand that he can't play the same type of game plan. He's got to make guys pass. He's got to force their hand a little bit, not wait for them to miss. He's got to force them to miss. And, if you know, I was courtside, and it was just fantastic watching the slice approaches, watching how he has improved as a volleyer, and he's only going to get better.
Hey, before we start talking about work ethic, which you and I have a lot of fun talking about, Luke, and this time with Andy Jacobs in our next segment, in our last minute of this segment, what do we have to look forward to this weekend?
Well, I think the biggest thing is look for Serena Williams. A big win for her. She beat the number 5 seed and Nadia Petrova from Russia. This is a girl who's coming down basically with a lot of fight and a lot of guts because she's out of shape. She's about 20 pounds overweight.
She looks a lot bigger.
She is a lot bigger. And you know what? You've got to understand that this is a movement game. If you can't move, you can't get to the ball. And that's going to be the question. If she wants to win her 8th Grand Slam, she's going to have to somehow, you know, do some scouting and things because she has lost a step.
When we come back, we'll talk more with IBM Advantage, Luke Jensen, and Dr. Andy Jacobs about U Sports and, in particular, about why the U.S. work ethic is maybe the biggest obstacle to us regaining our advantage in all the sports, not just tennis. How about soccer? How about basketball? How about baseball? When we come back, Luke Jensen, the marvelous Luke Jensen, and the serious Dr. Andrew Jacobs. Stay tuned on Head Games on Sports Byline and Sirius Channel 122. We'll be right back.